This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo with Baseball Outside the Box. I want to welcome everybody from around the world and in the U.S. We want to thank you for being on another great episode. We're excited again. We are in the beautiful city of Vancouver, B.C., Canada. As you know, we've been here before. We've done the show from here. We are actually attending the International Sports Group, ISG Baseball Coaches Program, along with BC Baseball, one of the best baseball organizations in the world. As you know, we travel around the world, and we love coming here to Vancouver because these guys do an awesome job. We've got a great lineup of speakers, and we're going to have one of the speakers on today, Reggie Smith, former Major League Baseball with the Los Angeles Dodgers. First of all, we've got Jerry Weinstein here. We've got Dave Turgeon. We've got Canadian national team coaches. We got Bruce Brown. We've got so many great speakers. Jeff Crochelle, as you know, also, he will be here at the Vancouver BC Baseball Coaches Clinic. You're going to get a chance to hear him if you're here. We're going to have over 200 coaches from all over the Vancouver Island. So this is like our eighth or ninth year. We want to thank BC Baseball for letting ISG be part of the program. We bring in some of the speakers. So we're excited to be here. We're live in Vancouver. And right now, we're going to have a great talk about baseball development, not only at the minor league, major league level, but also at the youth level. We got a great person. As you know, Reggie Smith's been on a show before. We've talked hitting. Actually, he could talk about anything about the game. We're talking about a guy that was, you know, 17 years in the major leagues, 22 years in professional baseball. He was a field coordinator with the Los Angeles Dodgers, a gold medal coach in Sydney with USA Baseball. Also, he was in Beijing, where they played in the Olympics, both in Sydney, won the gold, and in Beijing, won the bronze. I mean, he's been in the game so long. He knows so many people. He's been worked with all kinds of levels. He has his own baseball school in California. So we're excited to talk to Reggie about baseball development. We're just going to bounce and go and talk about the different aspects of the development of the game. So first of all, let me welcome Reggie to the show live on Baseball Outside the Box. How you doing, Reggie?
I'm good, Pete, and thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for, first of all, for all you do for the International Sports Group. Reggie's been all over the world for us. He does an unbelievable job, and we're, you know, it's a great honor to have him, obviously, not only on the show, but also part of the program. And so humble in a lot of ways, and that's what I like about Reggie, is we enjoy always talking. We just finished breakfast. We talked a little bit about what we're going to do on the show. So I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's first tell our audience a little bit about what you're doing. I know you got a new book out, Absolute Balance, and we're going to put that on our show notes. You can go to absolutebalance.com. Let's do this. Let's talk about your book, because you spent a lot of time working on this.
It's a coaching fundamental book, Pete, and it's something that over the years, there have been books out there, but I think this is probably one of the more comprehensive books that's been developed to help coaches, to even help dads and moms who want to get into coaching. It's an opportunity for them to go from pretty much A to Z in the things that will help them in their development as coaches, from T-ball all the way through high school and maybe into junior college, with some of the explanations, the terms and terminology that's used, and getting to a little bit of the basic strategies and fundamentals one. Fundamentals 2 is a little bit more advanced, but for right now, it takes you through how to teach, what to teach. It gives practice plans. It gives skills, assessment, and evaluations, and so forth in that book to help coaches of all levels and moms and dads who want to get involved in coaching as well.
You know, let's stay on that a little bit, and then we're going to get to also folks to the minor league system. You know, Reggie was a field coordinator for the Dodgers. We're going to talk about the development. Also, we're going to talk about, you know, the development, you know, when Reggie was with the Dodgers, and also when now, you know, we've seen a lot of the new systems coming out. We're going to talk about the good and bad things of both aspects, so we can learn a lot here. But before we do, let's stay a little bit with the, you know, you mentioned the moms, the dads. These are the volunteers around, not only in the U.S., but around the world, because I've always said it on the show, Reggie, the volunteers, if you look at the numbers, are the biggest coaches association around. Now, they're not organized as an association, but they're the number one because they're we have more volunteers in the world in baseball than we do in any other level. Right. Talk about how important it is and why it's so important that we help our volunteers.
It's extremely important, Pete. Probably besides life, the most precious gift that you can give is time. And when you're talking about volunteerism, that's what they're doing. They're giving time, and it's something that I'm so appreciative of, and others should be, because it's just that. Volunteerism is critical, especially in the needs of pretty much anything that we do, but especially in sports, baseball in particular, because so many people are starting to play the game, it's important that people are willing to coach kids, coach these teams, but even more importantly than that, making sure that they have the information necessary to be able to coach kids properly. Because the first thing that you want to do is make sure that you do no harm. You know, it's your responsibility as coach to keep these kids safe, as safe as possible, and provide them with information that's going to allow them to have some success at what they're doing. And along with that success, kids tend to have more fun when they're having success at it. And ultimately, that's what you want them to do. Yes, to improve, learn the about themselves, learn how to interact with other people, because these are all microcosms of life. But also be able to do these things in a proper way so that the kids ultimately will say, I had fun doing it.
Now, anything different than how you handled the minor league system when you did it?
Absolutely not. It's just that things are done at a higher skill level.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in my coaching, sometimes I was criticized. I said, well, don't you think that that's a little bit too advanced for these kids? I said, no. All I'm doing, I'm teaching them the same things that they see that their heroes are doing. It's the same thing that the major league players are doing. It's just how it's explained to them. And my expectations are not the same at the lower levels, but you give them that information. But at the professional level, when you get there, you're dealing with all pretty much all stars.
Mm-hmm.
They're the best of their group, and now they get to compete against each other, the people that are as good as they are and some that are better.
When you talk about working with young kids, do we tend to not allow them to try enough things, or are we giving them too much information at times? Where's the balance between that?
Well, the balance comes from how that information is presented to them. That's extremely important, because if you use jargon, if you use terms that are ambiguous, that they may not know what you mean, and oftentimes kids will just sit there and pretend like, yeah, I understand what you're saying, when they really don't. So you have to find that balance of how to present the information that you want to the kids based on their learning ability, their capability. So oftentimes what should happen, and what I believe should happen more often than not, that the information is given to the individual, that you know how he receives that, how he perceives the information that you're giving. So too much information, not enough. To find that balance, it just comes with time and experience of working with the kids and working to make sure that how it's presented to them, that they're able to execute it.
So what I'm hearing a lot of is, you know, we have to understand the individual player, whether he's a young kid, whether he's a professional, understand that player. So we're teaching each player individually different in a lot of ways.
Yes, it's the coach's responsibility to learn how that individual receives and perceives the information and what his understanding is of what you're saying.
So let's take an example. Well, and we could use anything, hitting, pitching, whatever you like. Let's take an example of, or even warm-ups. The player's doing something. Let's say they're hitting. Mm-hmm. Are we all going to hit off the tee and do the same drill off the tee, or are we are we individualizing things?
I'm going to individualize it because the one thing about drills, it goes back to an old saying that the great Celtics coach Red Auerbach, he was asked, well, what drills do you do? Because of all the consecutive championships at the time that the Celtics were winning. And Red Auerbach said, drills? He says, drills are like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer over and over. He says, it feels better when you stop doing them. So drills should be for a specific problem, not just the sake of doing drills where everyone has, because everyone may not have the problem that the drills are designed to fix or to help them improve. So if I have, for instance, a kid that is lunging, I have a drill specific for that. That's not a drill that everyone is going to do because everyone may not have that problem. Mm. So I say drills should be specific. But there are some that I feel that are universal that they can all do. And you usually do that by, if you're going to swing the bat, swing the bat. Swing it how you do it. And that comes from a natural fit. And at some time, I believe I've talked about it a little bit earlier in one of your other podcasts here about hitting, that everything should be specific for a specific problem. And that's the coach's responsibility to find out and know what that particular individual, that particular player needs work on.
All right, so let's talk about a plan. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you know, whether it's a development plan that you put together for your minor league system, for youth coaches, or whoever it may be. How do we start? I've got 12 players. I may know some of them. I may not know some of them. What do I do first to understand? What can I do first as a coach to understand the players, their skill level, their ability levels, their knowledge? Is there something I can begin with?
Well, yeah, at the amateur level, coaches usually do that through tryouts. Mm-hmm. And you assess and evaluate where you see particular players. If you have one player for your team, if you're picking a team, for instance, you see and evaluate the skill levels through tryouts. And you assess that all of the other things that you see, how well they run, how well they throw the ball, how well they field, how well they hit and swing the bat, and if they hit with power. But there are two other things that I feel are just as important, if not important, and that's their aptitude and their attitude. Your aptitude is your ability to apply instruction. And it also helps to measure your baseball IQ, their knowledge, and how they go about executing the things that you want. And the reason that you look and assess aptitude, because if you get to a point where you have two players of equal ability, which one do you choose if you can't have them both? You have to choose the one with the better aptitude because you can trust him mm-hmm. when the game's on the line.
And you've had to do that whether it's in a minor league system, college, it doesn't matter what level.
That's what I especially used and adapted when I became the field coordinator for the Dodgers. And that second grade, which is attitude. your attitude, how you go about receiving that instruction. How that kid go? Is he sullen? Is he sulked because anything that you're adding or asking him to do maybe a little bit differently? Does he take it as criticism and is he getting down? Or is he giving you that yes, coach, and he work and you see him go out to work on those specific things? Because I tell kids all the time, if you look at attitude, your attitude determines your altitude, how high you go. As long as you have a good attitude about what you're doing and have fun with it and look at it as constructive criticism and the things that you need to get to the next level. That's why those good aptitude and attitude were two important grades for me. And that's what I look for in my kids, and I stress all the time.
And Reggie, I mean, we like to do the show because we keep saying in the show that we've got, and that's why the volunteers are so important. The sooner you can get kids understanding this, the better. Because I'm assuming this, as they get older, it's tougher to make those changes.
It is so important that you need to be willing to make adjustments. Who was it, Stephen King, that says intelligence is the ability to adapt to change? So you show good intelligence there, because there are things that you might be asked to adjust, things that you're asked to change so that it fits the team concept. It fits in the ability of that manager or that coach to get the most out of whatever strategies that they may have and that they put in as far as a game plan and the expectations of having the players that can execute it.
You know, when we talk about development, we use it as a general term, but part of development is organizing a practice. It's organizing your coaches, training your coaches on how they're going to do things in the system. When you were with the Dodgers, what were some of the things that, because you had obviously a lot of coaches under you and a lot of players, what were some of the criteria that you stressed to your coaches when they're working with their players that they needed to follow to make sure that everybody was on the same page?
Well, what you do, the first thing you learn, what I call them ODS, O-D-S, organize, designate, supervise. So in organizing it, in the coaches that you have, you make sure first that there's a philosophy. There's that you have that of what you want to achieve. I named it, okay, we needed to get players to the major leagues out of the minor league system. So you, in organizing that, you have to make sure that you have the people that can execute whatever the philosophy is and whatever system that you put in, okay? So you have the people, you know their knowledge, you know what their strengths and weaknesses are, and you put them in the places where they can succeed. Then you delegate. You delegate them to do and achieve and accomplish the assignments that you're given, and you sit back and you supervise. So that being the case, the philosophy was, we want to develop the players that can get to the World Series and win it. Now, that might be similar. Well, wow. Didn't that include just getting to the major leagues? Well, that's part of it. But the philosophy is, no, we want to play in the World Series and we want to win. And then you put in a system that will accommodate that. So it becomes a matter, well, what is it that we want to do? Well, we want to make sure that our players are fundamentally sound in all aspects of the game and their knowledge of the game, particularly in their position, but learn the responsibilities. And what it stands for is personal responsibility in daily endeavors. So you take responsibility in what you need to accomplish that day. And that's what contributes to a winning philosophy and how we were able to develop young players to get to the next level. And ultimately, it was a formula that was used, that something that to date hasn't been repeated. I had four rookies of the year in a row that came out of that using that system.
Now, you use the word responsibility in here. When we talk about responsibilities, the coaches have responsibilities now, but how much of responsibility does the player have in learning the system, learning themselves, training themselves, you know, instead of the coach always there teaching them?
That's exactly what the term personal responsibility, your responsibility for your own learning. And it's there because that's what the coaches are there for. They're providing information to you, and believe that some of the best information that we possibly could provide through, again, the coaches learning and observing how each individual, each player received that information. That is what he would give him in whatever amount of doses that he could get. Someone that didn't process it as quickly, well, it goes back to the old saying that Branch Rickey used to have with coaches. Coaches would say things, man, if I told that kid once, I told him 1,000 times.
Right.
And he said, how many times am I going to have to tell him? Branch Rickey would say, one more time. So that's what was called. It's part of that, the patience and persistence that you need as a coach. So you, in the amount of dose and information that you provide each kid is going to vary. So that's what's necessary, and that's the thing that the coaches needed to learn, and something that we constantly talked about in our meetings, how we could improve how we disseminated information out, and it made it easier in our evaluations to determine who was going to move on and who needed to maybe stay a little bit longer at whatever level.
You know, perfect segue into this, because let's take the audience into an individual talk with a player. Do we tend to talk too much to a player, not let them do it enough? You know, are there cues? You know, do we talk mechanics too much? Should we be talking about something else? Where's the balance with all this? Because, you know, a player can get really confused if you're always given information.
Well, one of the things that we would do, I sat down with coaches, and the first thing that we did was removed all ego. So you checked your ego at the door, and I would say things like, "Hey, I don't want to hear it from, well, I did this for that kid, I did that," or said, because the last time I checked, we're still failing over 90% of the time. That for every 100 kids that we sign, you know, we're sending 96 home. You know, so that's not that big a success rate. But you have to find that balance of making sure that we communicated with each other, because as kids move through different levels, whatever that next coach was at the next level already knew coming in what to expect and what the individual player that was moving up needed to work on. And that just comes simply through communication. Talking it out and saying, okay, this particular player responds better to this coach. And that's what you do. We needed to get players to the next level, and needed to get players to the highest level. We needed to get those players to the highest level that we felt and the organization felt had the greatest chance of giving us an opportunity to do what? Play in the World Series. Not just play in the major leagues, but play and get to the World Series.
All right, here's probably one of the hardest things, I think, in general in baseball when it comes to taking things that you've done in practice and making it happen in a game? You know, were there things that you guys concentrated on within your development that when they did serve?
We've been working on something. I will give a specific task for him to work on in a session. Okay? And as they're doing that, if it's an adjustment that I'm making, and you let them go along, I'll give something, and then I won't say anything for a while because you can't keep talking because they're having to process the last thing that you just said. So I will sit and observe and see how they go. And then as I see them making the progress, the progress that they're making and making the adjustment, I stress them because now all of a sudden I create situations for them. Okay, two outs, time runs at third base, and you've got a 3-2 count. You stress them because in doing so, what you'll see, if they have gained the confidence in the adjustments that they make, they will not default back to the old habits.
Yeah.
That will show up when they're stressed. And if these are the things that you get that are in ball games, you tend to see players default back to. So if it was a bad habit, well, that bad habit's going to show up. But anything that we learn new, it's necessary to create a new neural pathway for that to become a new habit.
Is that something that we don't do enough?
I agree. We don't do that enough. We don't give the individual players enough time to make those adjustments. That's where the patience comes in, and perseverance on the part of the student to trust themselves, trust the information that they're receiving, and give them the time that they need to make those adjustments, to create those new pathways for the brain to say, okay, this is the new way that we want to do this.
And for our coaches and parents, that could, one of the reasons that maybe that doesn't happen enough is because possibly it's already a game where kids are failing, so now we're afraid to put them under stress in practice because now they fail even more, but that's actually good.
That is good because that's the place you want them to fail, where they realize and that this is something I need to work on and be able to say, hey, that's okay. I expected that. Just keep working. The information that I'm providing you is the why.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me why. Because if you understand why, you can teach yourself how, rather than me telling you how to do something. And if that doesn't fit you, it doesn't fit how you naturally do things, it's going to be conflict.
Yeah.
And what that conflict is going to lead to is confusion. And what that confusion is going to lead to is frustration. And what that frustration is going to lead to is that you give up.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I want you to address a couple other areas. The same thing you're talking about. How can a coach do that in fielding? How can a coach do that in base running? Give a couple examples. In other words, stress them out in those situations.
We'll take, for instance, an infield. We'll take ground balls. How many times have you seen hit a ground ball to the kid, he misses it, then he goes to the end of the line?
Absolutely. All the time.
I say no.
Mm-hmm.
You hit him as many balls as necessary for him to have some success, because that's the last thing that he leaves with. He had some success. Take another one.
So if he misses, he takes another one?
Yes, give him another one. Because I tell my kids and teach them to say, hit me another one, coach. Because that says he wants it. He wants an opportunity to correct that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's not trying to miss the ball. But if he misses it, if he just leaves and goes to the end of the line, that's what he's left with. I failed. Mm. You want to leave them with something positive, and that you have confidence as a coach in them that I know you can do this. I know you are going to do this, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to succeed. So hit him another one. Or either I'll say, take another one.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could not say, they teach the kids to say, hit me another one, coach, because they want to have some success. And as I said earlier, the more success they have, the more fun they're going to have.
Sure. Now, Reg, is there...
And the more confident that they're going to become.
And now you're building their confidence, so that's a mental aspect of it. Now, is there a time where it has to relate to the game? Because in the game, you're not going to get a second chance on a ground ball.
You teach them that take personal responsibility. That one was on me. I got the next one. And his teammate is there to help him. One of the things as coaches that you want to remember, it's THINK, T-H-I-N-K. And what that stands for, you always say, is it? T, true. Is it? H, helpful.
Hmm.
Is it? I, inspiring. Is it N, necessary? And is it K, kind?
Hmm.
So think. Think as a coach. Think out there to everything that you're doing has an effect on the baseball life and even life beyond baseball on that kid and how he responds and how he leaves a practice, how he leaves a ball game. And when they develop that confidence over that, the coaches, they know, have their back, and that it's going to be a fun time for them, regardless of what happens. If they're going to be back out there, then you become a good coach. And usually, you talk about good coaches have good players because that's who make the good coaches.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's give our audience one more thing: base running. Something we can work on in base running, where is, you know, like you said, stressful, under pressure, game-like.
Teaching runners, especially after they learn to take leadoffs, for instance, that they're being aggressive, but selectively aggressive in smart base running and in paying attention to the things that will determine what base, the next base that they will attempt to go to. As a base runner, you want to know how many outs there are. As a base runner, you want to know what the situation calls for. That is, what does your run represent? You want to know the depth that are outfielder's playing. You want to know his arm strength. You want to know his accuracy. And again, the situation of the game, whether you're going to take that extra base or even be aggressive enough to take the extra base, or are you going to be more conservative and say, we're going one base at a time until the run at the plate becomes either the tying or go ahead run. All of these things as base runners that you need to learn. And believe it or not, kids are not too young to start learning those things.
Yeah, and I think...
those behaviors.
And explain this. I mean, I've always said, and again, just from experience, I've always said that, you know, the younger you can get them to think on their own, to do things on their own, the more mistakes they can make when they're young, you know, let it happen, because... Why micromanage everything for them? Then later on, they don't know how to do things on their own.
In talking about that, especially young players and getting younger and giving them the information that they need, there's a time and a place for it. And why I don't coach or give instruction while the ball game is in process.
That's critical. Talk about that.
You know, because usually you see coaches yelling out information.
Yes.
And especially if they're yelling at a particular player, all he's hearing is a yelling at him, and they tend to take it personal. Or they're hearing it come from the stands, and the coaching coming from the stands. No, you wait till they come in, and rather than saying, you should have done this, I have them come in and say, what was your thinking on that particular play when you did it? And then you give them an explanation as an option. And maybe next time you might want to try this. And see, and it's inside there. It's within the team that we're all bonded together. I'm not yelling it out so that everybody in the stands can and embarrassing that kid. So I coach after it has happened. You know, you might punt and give a hand club. Hey, pick it up. You're okay. And what you do, that's why you also, in your team, you look for team leaders. Mm-hmm. Those guys that you can give the responsibility to pick your teammate up. You know, little things like that. That's when that's done. And you take your games and the things that might have become problems or were problems during the game, that becomes your next practice.
Yeah, excellent.
That, those are the things that you work on in practice.
So in a game, and I'll give you an example, you'd much rather have players talking to each other, moving each other. You know, maybe a hitter is late and, you know, and the right fielder's not moving. You'd rather have the first baseman help the right fielder than have a coach do that.
Yes, because that's exactly what I was saying. We, the players coach themselves, we're just directors.
Yeah.
Out there as coaches, because we prepare them before games. That's what practice is for. That is to prepare the players. There's a John Wooden that said that if you're failing to prepare for success, you are successfully preparing to fail.
Wow.
So it's that pre-game. It's everything that you do in practice to prepare your players. Once the game starts, I want them to go and play.
Coaches and parents, I hope you heard all that. I think that is just some outstanding things to understand. Because, you know, even I know when I was a younger coach, sometimes you yell things out because you're trying to impress others too, to let people know that you know things. Or you might want, you know, sometimes we want parents to know we're doing something. Because, you know, if you say it in the dugout, the parents don't hear it. And then you think, well, you know, the parents might think that you don't know anything. So sometimes we're trying to impress the wrong people.
Well, I want to impress the players, not the parents, because that's one of the things that I let them know up front. No coaching from the stands.
Yeah.
And if you see us not being animated and so forth on the field, other than waving a player around the bases or a slide and doing the things that you're doing, it doesn't mean that we're not involved with your kids. It's just that we want them to feel that what they do here, what they say here, when they leave here, you let it stay here. If they choose to share it with you when they go home, it's up to them. It's the old saying that we like to talk about, that the kids want to go home after a ball game with their father or their mother.
Yes.
Most kids want to go home with their mother because usually after the game, they don't want to talk about what happened on the field. They want to know, can we get pizza?
Yeah, exactly. You
know, that, whereas the dad wants to talk about the game. He wants to know, well, what happened?
Right.
Okay, what were you thinking?
You know, that's everywhere in the world.
You know, so those are the things that we try to educate the parents along the way with the kids of how we're doing things and when to even approach. That's after a ball game or during a ball game. We call it, and hate to use this term, no feeding the animals. Mm-hmm. You know, don't bring them water. Don't bring them food to the dugout. These are things that they were prepared before to know to bring themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear from the kids, well, I left my bag in my dad's car. No.
Or my mom didn't pack.
My mom didn't, yeah. And or I don't want your mom helping you out of the car, bringing your bag with you. These are all things that the kids know that they're supposed to do when they play for us. They know that when I say, or the coaches say, practice starts at 2:00. We start practicing at 2:00. We're not getting ready. That means get there early, get warmed up, and usually have, like I said, someone out there is responsible for them, either the kids. Get warmed up. You're ready to go. So when we say practice starts, we start practicing. That way we maximize the amount of time that we have with them rather than warming up and doing that, because you lose very precious time in the things that they need to work on. And besides, when you've given kids the responsibility of preparing themselves, it works better, and you'll see that the kids are more disciplined in that sense too, because we even have dress codes.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll tell you what, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's an extremely important topic to understand really well. And, you know, and the game's tough enough, but we don't need to put more pressure on these kids by yelling from the stands, as you said, and all that. Now, folks, you know, Reggie played 17 years in the big leagues. You know, he was a very, very good hitter, lots of home runs, average, everything. He obviously didn't do all that without knowing how to hit a curveball. So I'm going to throw him a little curveball here, and I'm very confident about this, because Reggie played in Japan. And as you all know, folks, I've talked about Japanese baseball a lot on the show. I have a lot of respect for Japanese baseball. So I want to get it from somebody who's played there and who's practiced there. When we're talking about baseball development, the Japanese in some ways have broken the general concept of, you know, nowadays they say sometimes don't stay on one fundamental too long, you know, do different things. But, you know, the Japanese, they take one thing and they hammer it out and do it over and over and over. And they seem to be able to transfer what they do in practice into a real game really well. And you've played against Japanese, you've played in Japan, you've trained in Japan. Give us an insight to Japanese baseball, why they're really this good, because of the fact that, you know, they're maximizing their bodies from, they're not very big people, they're not very strong people in some lot of ways. They're physically strong, but they're not, you know, muscularly strong. Why are they so good in what they do?
It's repetition. It's something in taking pride in what they're doing, and it's a tremendous respect for the game, not only the game of baseball, but for the people, the coaches that are providing information to them. Sometimes, you know, I thought that expectations were a little excessive, mm-hmm. but in the whole scheme of things, you look at it as, if there is a problem, let's fix the problem instead of placing blame. Because if you fix the problem, then no one is to blame. So that's the way that they go about doing things, that we're going to work on this fundamental until we know that it becomes automatic. Mm. And you do that over and over, because pretty much that's what I do. I've taken the best of what I learned in playing in Japan and that culture, and what I had learned here in the U.S. and married the two, from the standpoint that when we're doing fundamentals, that's already laid out. They know when the next practice or whatever, what the fundamental of the day is going to be, and that's what everyone works on. We get there till we're satisfied that they have this information. You're not taking for granted anything that you think that they know, or, oh, well, that's something they should know already. No. You make sure that they've covered that. I go back to the old Branch Rickey saying, how you say it one more time, and you say why you see major league players go to spring training, they're taking fly balls, hundreds of fly balls. You see infielders taking ground balls. Mm-hmm. You see them doing team drills or working on pickoffs and cutoffs and realizing these are major league players. Why did they even do this? Because Branch Rickey said, well, you have to assume that they went home and got stupid over the winter. you know, they forgot how to do these things. So sure. You're not taking anything for granted that someone knows something. So you have your plan, and you go over that plan to let them know that this is what we're going to work on, and you work on it until you're satisfied that they've got it. Because ultimately, what happens, if you do it enough, that's probably what's going to show up in the ball game. So you have a reasonable expectation that those things will get accomplished in the ball game, and that's the Japanese approach. Let's take nothing for granted. The little minutia, the paying attention to the fine details, they're very good about that.
And do they, you know, you talked about earlier taking things in practice, putting them under pressure. Did they do that when you played there, or did you see it at the younger levels there?
The expectation in practice was always there as a game. Everything was very serious. very serious. Is if anything, the pressure was felt and it was constant.
Interesting.
In their practices, because you know, where it's here, there's a little levity where you could kind of take a minute off, take a little time off to just relieve some of that pressure.
Sure.
The difference isn't there now.
They never took off.
You can't take that time off.
Was there anything they did different in, like in batting practice or in pitching? Anything that you may have seen when you were there that you said, wow?
The number of swings that we got, and I think that came from the prison, Sadaharu Oh, the great home run hitter and ball player there in Japan.
Somebody you've been with many times.
I've spent time with and learning from him, because he had been, as far as hitting was concerned, I think I was around the best. Ted Williams, Willie Mays, and Sadaharu Oh, a lot of the greats that I was fortunate to spend time with. But he used to hit for an hour.
Wow.
Before every game. And the reason, because of that flamingo statue with the leg kick, the one thing he always said, it required him to have and maintain better timing with that particular technique.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the time that's spent. And it's about making sure that you have a full understanding of whatever it is that you're doing.
All right, super. Let's do this. Let's jump back to the U.S. when talking about development now, the things that you had talked about in development. Let's talk about how you see the game now approaching the new types of techniques that are being taught, the statistics. Talk about what you think, where the game is heading in a positive way and possibly where it could be heading in a not-so-positive way.
Well, let's do what I consider the negative aspects of it first.
Okay.
Because you've gotten away from what I believe that made the game so exciting in the first place. It made people, because of the spontaneity of what the game provided for you. Anything could happen, and it would happen in a more of a natural way of players doing the things that they do. Unfortunately, today with the analytics, there seem to have been change just for the sake of change. Not that the game necessarily needed it, but just people that came to the game that used statistical information, and that's all it is in human performance, and started to measure to see if what its relevance was as far as the statistical and the analytics, and what's evolved and what I see evolving out of it is, to me, the acceptance of mediocrity.
Hmm.
My day, 300 batting average was a gold standard. Now 230 to 250 is okay, as long as you meet these other metrics and that you have things like, well, wins against replacement, with your slugging percentage, your on base percentage, all of these things that have become more relevant. When in my day, it was about what I call 200. How many runs did I drive in? How many did I score? So that production, I looked at 200, and the closer I could get to that would determine the type of year I had, as it related to how I was able to help the team. And then a lot of players did that. Now, to me, it's not as necessary, they feel, because instead of one player doing that, well, we can get a couple of players that can give us this much, and this guy give us this much, and we get the same thing as one player could give you. And in the process, the players that they're bringing in are more computer savvy. They're more literate in analytics, and that's what they want. And you see young players that are being taught things that they feel that they need to get to the next level and play at the next level, and that's it, hit more home runs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay to strike out.
Mm.
And these are all things that I see that are negatives and is not producing more runs, is producing fewer runs. And it's allowing, I think, the pitchers who, yes, are throwing with a little higher velocity, it's providing them an opportunity to excel even that much more, where they're dominating the hitters with the mechanics that they're using and the approaches that they're taking, because they simply want to hit more home runs or as they say, doubles, and give up opportunities. And what I say by give up opportunities, that is, a strikeout is not okay.
Right.
A strikeout is a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and being able to put the ball in play, being able to have good bat control and hit against the shift, if they put that on to get on base, because you have to get on base, I think, to produce the most runs. And whereas singles start rallies, and singles sustain rallies, whereas home runs kill rallies.
Yeah.
And so these are some of the negatives that I see in the analytics in strictly using that approach and bringing in people who may not have done these things themselves, but can read the numbers and say, this is what you should do. It's not that simple. Now,
on the flip side, the positive.
You know, you don't want to be mediocre. They want to be good. They've gotten and developed these great bodies and everything, and they want to do well, and they see the life-changing financial situation that they can create for themselves for the rest of their lives, that the players are starting to see this. And I think Major League Baseball, the commissioner's office, is starting to listen, because they were losing women.
Right.
They're saying, well, the game is boring.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying it was boring because there wasn't that much action going
right.
on, not many runs being scored.
Yeah, a lot of strikeouts.
So I feel and I'm encouraged now that that's going to start changing. It's going to come back around to where, yeah, okay, this make the perfect marriage between the analytics that are being used,
mm-hmm.
and still the excitement and the spontaneity of the game of players, the things that they can do so well, because to get to that level of the major leagues, you have to be special. Because if you look at the number of people that have played the game at the highest level, Major League Baseball, since the game first became a professional in 1869, it's over 100 years ago, there's only been 19,000 Major League players.
Hmm.
Out of all of the people that have played in all of those years, over 100 years, only 19,000. So that tells you just how special the players are and the people are that get to that game. And to get the game back to where the fans are coming back out and they're enjoying it and having a good time and cheering and rooting for their team, especially when they feel that they have a chance of getting to the playoffs. They have a chance of getting through the playoffs. They have a chance of getting to the World Series. And that's only going to come as you start to produce more runs and more excitement for the game, especially with the caliber and the talent of the young players that are coming along,
mm-hmm.
today and the skill sets that they possess and have the potential to develop. I believe that's what it's going to take. And that's, to me, that's a plus. That's something that's exciting to continue to grow the game.
Now, for our coaches, you know, when we talk about analytics, science, you know, does it help us at least understand that we're doing some things right, or maybe we may be doing some things wrong? It gives us a way to evaluate. And an example would be, you know, Ted Williams in the 40s said that the, and we don't, and we did the hitting part already, but Ted Williams in the 40s said that the swing is slightly up a little bit. Right. Well, that's confirming, you know, the statistics confirm that, where back then we couldn't really say that. I mean, we could say it, but we really couldn't tell you exactly that that's correct.
Well, you know, you asked me, why did he know that? And it made a lot of sense. And I, like I said, I was fortunate enough very early in my career to have Ted Williams as a mentor and as an instructor, and teaching that and making us understand what that meant. And it's something that occurred naturally. Mm. But see, what's happened now with the analytics that they have and the technology that we have today to quantify mm-hmm. those things, and that's what it came to down to. The people actually that are running the game now, they deal more with quantifiable things that they can wrap their heads and their minds around. And thus you have statistics. Thus you have the analytics, the capabilities of quantifying these things that are they necessary or not. Well, to take an advantage of that is important. We just have to be careful how much of it we use and when.
When we use it. That's important. I think that's a great point. The other aspect of it I wanted to mention was you hear a lot about the shift, and when you played, they had shifts. You know, the shift isn't something new. It just maybe they might be shifting a little bit more nowadays because of statistics. But talk to our audience, because, you know, I'm not convinced 100% that it's that easy to hit against the shift, because I would assume a lot of it has to do with the type of pitch you're getting too.
It does have a lot to do, but let's get back.
And I say that, and I want to say, because you hear a lot of people saying, well, why don't they just hit it the other way then?
Well, that being said, what I was going to address there, it comes down to bat control. There was a simple game that we used to play as kids called Pepper.
Yes.
And you had to be able to control that bat to hit the ball to the different players that were there lined up waiting for their turn to get up and to hit, because if you missed the ball, you lost your turn at bat, and the next guy in line as you move up the line to hit Pepper. Pepper, that's what it's about. It's about bat control.
Yeah, we've gotten away from that.
And we've gotten away from it that you don't see that. So, in hitting against the shift, Sparky Anderson was the first to start putting the shift on me. Hmm. And what I did, if that pitcher made a mistake in not locating the pitch where it needed to be, I hit against the shift. Shortstop used to move all the way around and left that open for me, especially hitting from the left side because of the pull. They knew that if they made a mistake at the wrong place in, I could hit it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, fine. What they're going to do, then we're going to pitch against the shift. So if I want to pull the ball, I'm going to be pulling a pitch that's away from me. So I would go, okay, I'd hit the ball through that shortstop, and Sparky Anderson would come down in the bench every time, and he'd say, I'm going to give you that all day because I'm not going to give you a pitch to hurt us. But if you want to take the single, you know, go ahead. And I would take it, and I'd tell him. I'd say, I'm going to take it.
Every time,
because remember, 300 was the gold standard as a hitter.
Right.
You would hit 300 or above.
And if you had many guys doing that, that's pretty good.
And that's then when out of those years, I was with the Cardinals and Dodgers, and that's what we did. We took advantage of what they gave us.
But you weren't able to do that just because you told yourself you're going to do that.
No, I did because you practiced it.
That's the key.
That's it. That is it. We practice it. Like I said, hitting the ball the other way. You see guys doing it in practice today. They practice hitting the ball the other way in their first round of BP.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the problem when it comes in the game? Because I'm practicing in practice the things that I will need to do in a game. What is practice for? And why is it's every practice should have a purpose. They have purposeful practices. The reason why you do these things, because we were talking earlier about how does it translate into a ball game. That's what purposeful practices achieve for you, that you will gain the confidence that when the game starts, you already know what you need to do. You've already rehearsed it. And when that situation presents itself, it's automatic. You don't have to think about it. You just do it. A great Nike saying,
just do it. And you said it perfectly earlier, the Japanese, after a while, it just becomes secondary for them.
Secondary. They know what they're expected to do. They've rehearsed it.
I'm also thrilled you brought up Pepper, because I want to bring it up. We got a couple more things. We'll talk about this. And then the way I'd like to end the show, we've done it before. Anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't get a chance to, that you think was important, you know, to mention to the coaches, will be the last couple minutes you have just to kind of talk to our coaches around the world. But before we do that, when you mentioned Pepper, I want to ask you, one thing I liked about Pepper was it was the back control, but I also liked that, you know, especially with kids, they never throw the same speed, the Pepper. Now, you know, sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's in, sometimes it's out. I know they're not throwing the speed of the game, but it's working on your timing too a little bit, and understanding how to time the ball.
It's all of the above, because it's still about your ability to react to what you see.
Mm-hmm.
It's about reacting. If the ball is up in the zone, if it's down, you still got to get the barrel of the bat on it, and you find a way to do that. And more importantly, you still have to direct it. So these are specific challenges that you're rehearsing that can come up in a ball game. So that's why Pepper is so important. It's about bat control, because that's what you're doing. You're referring to it, this guy's got good hand-eye coordination. Well, that's how it's developed, because it's a brain function. Mm. Seeing is a brain function.
Yeah.
Reacting, it's how the brain is perceiving and processing the information that allows the body to do the things that it does, being able to put the barrel of that bat on the ball. So that's another purposeful practice, purpose to achieve a goal.
All right. This has been a great show, and I want to end it with Reggie. Is there something out there that, you know, you want to mention to the coaches, players, and parents around the world that maybe we need, and it could be related to development or anything else that, you know, we really wanted to address, but we didn't get a chance to?
Well, there isn't much. We've covered a lot in this, but there is something that I would like to reiterate and repeat, and that is, first, do no harm. It's your responsibility as a coach and as a parent to make as safe an environment and learning environment as you possibly can for the kids that you work with. Not only just your kid, but all kids. And we're responsible to them to provide them with the best information so that they can have the best time that they possibly can have. Show patience. Probably the most patient people in the world are animal trainers.
Hmm.
Because it's through and helping to achieve a behavior is the amount of time and repetition and doing the same things over and over and over again. And that takes patience and it takes persistence to be able to do that. So have the patience and think, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? And I think it'll take you a long way in having the kids to have as much fun and as they possibly can and enjoy this little boy's game with baseball.
great way to end a show. And are we lucky with Baseball Outside the Box to be here with Reggie Smith, former major league player? I mean, think about it. Switch hitter, the numbers he put up, pretty close to being a Hall of Famer. You know, that's going to be up to the Hall of Fame committee to decide. But, man, I'll tell you what. We're talking about a guy who was in the game over 22 years playing, field coordinator with the Dodgers, you know, Olympic gold medal man, coach. We're so lucky to be here in Vancouver at BC Baseball and the International Sports Group Coaching Clinic this weekend. We've got a lot of great speakers coming in, so it's really been a thrill. This is what we call our portable studio that we brought to Vancouver to be able to do the show one-on-one, face-to-face. There's no better way to do a show. We're so excited we're able to do this. So Reggie, from our behalf, just thank you very much for being here, you know, for being on the show, and also for being as part of the International Sports Group coaching caravan.
Pete, thank you for the opportunity, and certainly to the International Sports Group to allow me to share the things that I've learned and pass along, because I guess probably the only way to keep a gift is to share it.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, this has been awesome. Hey, folks, special thank you to Brian Kroc with the Lineup Media Group, our producer. Also, don't forget, email me at petercaliendo@att.net. Any questions, anytime you got a question about the game, if we don't have the answer, we'll find the answer. We'll get a hold of Reggie. We'll get a hold of other experts in the game. We'll get you that answer and get you the help that you need. Anything, we are here for you all the time. So don't forget, petercaliendo@att.net. Also, our Twitter at Baseball Out. Check it out. We've got a lot of great information on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. Don't forget to share our show. The more people you can share the show with, you know, go ahead and go to iTunes and Stitcher. See if you can give us a rating there. That also helps get the show out. But the more you share it, the more people know about the show, the more education there is. Remember, we're trying to reach as many coaches, players, and parents in the U.S. and around the world with the show. So keep doing what you're doing. Keep helping us out. We love our loyal listeners. If you're a new listener, join the show. And don't forget, we'll give you updates. If you join the show on Stitcher and iTunes, we'll give you updates on when new shows are up. They're usually up every week. We'll try to bring more shows to you. We've got more interviews coming from Vancouver, Canada, at the International Sports Group, BC Baseball. Thanks to BC Baseball for being great, great hosts. They've got a great program here going on. So don't forget, keep getting smarter. Keep listening to the Baseball Outside the Box. And have a great coaching day.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.